Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled, The Value of Voice Inflection When It Comes to Sales and Closing Techniques. Tom, in this hurry-up, high-tech world that we live in today, it's easy to forget about the basics when it comes to sales. Sometimes it's good to go back to the basics and check our foundation. Although Zig Ziglar passed away nearly 10 years ago now, what he taught us in the area of motivation and sales training still applies today, don't you think?
It sure does, Bill. Zig Ziglar's foundational training is timeless. This month, we went to the archives of the Ziglar Organization, and we found an amazing program covering the value of voice inflection when it comes to sales and closing techniques. I would encourage our listeners to ignore the references to things like cassette tapes and some other time-sensitive material, and to listen to the basic sales techniques being presented.
Oh, I agree, Tom. Although, you know, there are some great new ideas when it comes to sales training, the basics still exist, and they need to be a huge part of a person's sales foundation. Since Zig Ziglar is legendary, we won't waste any time reviewing his life's resume. And so now, with the value of voice inflection when it comes to sales and closing techniques, here is Zig Ziglar with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Probably the most neglected area in the world of sales training has to do with the use of your voice. I'm now going to make a very strong statement. In my judgment, the most important thing you can do to dramatically improve your closing percentages and to make more sales is to deliberately train your voice. Learn how to use voice inflections, because most people simply do not properly approach that. A lot of people learn the other things, but for whatever reason, they learn how to use their voice by accident. Strong statement to make now. If you do not have your own cassette player recorder, you, my friend, are not in the world of selling yet. Or at least you're not deadly serious about becoming as much as you can become. You absolutely must get a good cassette recorder. You must record your presentation. Now, I know a lot of times people say, well, Zig, I don't sound on tape as I sound in person. Well, I got news for you. You do. Now, there might be a little distortion, but basically you sound exactly the same in person as you do on tape. Now, the reason for the apparent distortion is this. A couple of years ago, my wife had an operation on her ear. I was talking with a surgeon about this very subject, and I said, why does it sound different, your voice, when you're recorded as verse when you're talking? He said, very simple. When you listen to what you say as you talk, the primary source of sound is coming through bone. Now, I'm not calling you bonehead. I'm just saying the primary source of sound comes through bone. Then he said, when you make the recording, the primary source of sound is coming through the air. And that's why it makes the difference. You need to record your presentation. It would be ideal if it could be in front of a live prospect. If that cannot be handled, then you put it in a simulated, in a classroom situation, the full presentation. Give it everything you got. Do it as you normally would do. Then you need to do two things. You need to listen back and analyze, and then you need to script your presentation. You need to do the same thing with the way you answer objections, the way you close sales. The whole bit needs to be recorded. You're going to discover some interesting, some pleasing, and some information that you won't be glad to get, except for the fact that it will help you to become infinitely more professional. You're going to discover, first of all, that the chances are about 9 to 1 that you talk too much. That's right. The second thing you're going to discover is that particularly toward the end of the presentation, you have a tendency to get into much of a monotone. And the third thing is you're going to discover is that you deal in a lot of areas that have nothing whatever to do with the sale itself. Let me tell you what's going to happen. When you put the words to script, They're going to remind you of some things that you have forgotten. You're going to then write those things down, those points, those examples, those ideas. And when you write down what you'd been using, combined with what you had forgotten, some beautiful new ideas are going to be generated from it. You're going to have a surge in the growth of your self-image. You're going to realize that you're much further down the path as a professional than you realized that you were. Big word of caution. Profound statement. Listen carefully. Pay attention. Don't go anywhere right now. Stay with this recording. If you're not powerful careful with all this new information, you're going to be guilty of gross overkill. You're going to tell that prospect about three times as much as they need to know in order to make the decision. Then what do? You simply sift through this new information and load it with those power shots. You also will have additional information to deal with the questions and objections. And instead of having fluff in there, you give them an awful lot of meat from hello to goodbye. I can absolutely assure you, when you give it more thought, you will be a far better, a far more productive, a far more professional sales person. All right, now, I mentioned the fact that you've now gotten a great deal of information. You now need to start training your voice so that you can make it more effective. You do that, first of all, as you listen to that presentation, you ask yourself a question. If I were calling on me with that presentation I just made, would I be convinced? Would I buy from me? That's a very important thing. Then we need to look at how we change the inflection of the voice to make those words more effective. All I'm saying is that with voice inflection, you can give it an entirely different perspective and an entirely different meaning. You can tell your child to do something, or you can ask a prospect to do something, and it can either be in love or hate using the same words. But the tone, the inflection of your voice is what makes the difference. And so as we look at the voice inflection close, you learn to do the things I'm talking about first by taking that one sentence, "I did not say he stole the money." And you need to use those sentences into a recorder until a stranger can listen to them and tell you what those words are saying. Now, you'll have to practice that a number of different times, and you'll have to listen carefully and make it come back. And when you have then done that successfully, now re-record your presentation. With the new voice inflection and the new information, you will discover that in a matter of a month, you can dramatically increase the impact of that presentation. Then as you listen to this recording, you will want to play these things over and over, and you'll need to back it up and then spread it forward and back it up and then let it go forward to hear this particular thing a number of times from here on in. How many of you have prospects who occasionally say to you that your price is a little out of line? Can I see your hands? I know of very few salespeople who do not encounter that objection. Now, some of them bring it up in one way, some in another. One guy will be dogmatic, "That price is ridiculous." You might have an old boy down home kind of a philosopher who will kind of say, "Well, you folks kind of proud of that stuff yourself, ain't you?" Another one might be a little timid or a little hesitant, you know, and he'll say, "Well, it seems to me that that price is a little high." Now, they're all talking about price, but you handle them in a different way. The prospect who says, "That price is ridiculous," you simply lower your voice and repeat almost verbatim what they said. "The price is ridiculous?" Now, that sounds so simple, but you'll need to practice it on your recorder a number of times. What you have done psychologically is you now have moved the objection back over to his side of the table. Now, he's got to justify his statement instead of you defending the price. And there is a lot of difference. Now, you can use these in social situations, family situations, or any other situations. You know, ladies, you might beat your husband home if you both work, or if you do not work and he gets home and you've had a tough day, you know, you simply say to your husband, honey, did you want to take me to Alamans for dinner tonight, or would Farfallows be better? Well, he might not be in the kind of mood to take you out to dinner. He might well say, well, honey, I really didn't want to take you anywhere to dinner. Or he might be even more emphatic than that. You don't argue with him. You simply look at him and say, you don't want to take me to dinner? Huh? It's almost unfair, isn't it? Some people call them the weaker sex. I'm always amazed at that myself. They live longer than we do. Any doctor will tell you that their endurance is much greater. Their threshold of pain is much greater. All of these good things. We'll learn someday. But anyhow, you might be grass cutting time at home. And so you say to your son, son, it's time to cut the grass. Well, you know, some of our youngsters are not always overly motivated, excited, and enthused, and dedicated and committed to cleaning the yard as we are. And so he might well say, I don't want to cut the grass. Well, you just look at him and simply say, you don't want to cut the grass, son? Now, what you've done very simply is you put it back on his side of the fence. And now he has to deal with it. It might be time to study the lessons. It's time to start working on your homework, son. I don't want to work on my homework. You're not interested in a good education, son? Put it on his side, you see. Now, what does all of this do? All of this very simply puts you, instead of in an antagonistic position where it's me against you, you're making him or her accept their responsibilities for their conduct. And if you can do that, in many cases, you're going to improve the performance. Now, in selling somebody, if you can make that customer start thinking, see, if you are selling a legitimate product at a legitimate price and it is in their best interest to buy, then you're making them think along those identical lines. Yes, voice inflection can play a tremendous role in selling. It means that you're selling on the offense instead of the defense. As Charlie Cullen said, you are selling audaciously. You are challenging the prospect. Now, I want to say something here, as I've said before. In my judgment, the single most important skill you need to concentrate on is the learning of the use of your voice. I want to emphasize this is simple, but it is not easy. It's going to be a little embarrassing and challenging to sit there by yourself talking into that cassette player, making like a movie star or an actor somewhere or a recording artist. But my friend, the performance and the playing field of your empty room there, if you handle it properly, it will improve your performance much, much, much in front of the prospect. I challenge you to get your cassette out and you do exactly what I'm talking about. You need to do it a dozen times, even 20 to 30 times to get that voice inflection exactly right. Is it trouble? Yes. Is it work? Yes. Is it worth it? You betcha. It's worth every bit of it. Now, suppose that the prospect has simply said to you, it seems to me that the price is a little out of line. Now, please understand one thing. There are a lot of prospects who, for whatever reason, will automatically say the price is too high. Makes no difference what it is. They think that puts them in a better position to negotiate a better price or to get a better deal in some way, form, or fashion from you. And so they automatically going to say something about the price being a little too high. What you need to do is find out if price really is the problem or is there another issue. My friend John Hammond has successfully handled literally thousands of objections of this nature. And what he does is very simple. He looks at the prospect and says, if there were a way I could show you that the price is more than fair and the product is worth every dime we're asking, would you go ahead and take advantage of our offer today? Now, what you're going to do is find out, is price the objection or is there something else? This forces the prospect to make a commitment based on price when his real objection might be color, style, neighborhood, or something else you could and should, even must, identify. If this is the situation, his response is going to be, well, no, not really. Price is not really the problem. And when he says that, then you can simply say, then there must be some other reason you're hesitating. Would you mind if I ask what that reason might be? A superb procedure for smoking out the real objection. Price is too high. Let me ask you a question, Mr. Prospect. Do you like the product? Notice again all the questions we're asking. Do you like the product? Well, yes, I like it, but it says that the price is high. Lower your voice. Look your prospect right in the eye. And I'll say this so many times throughout the series, look the prospect in the eye. That's one of the reasons, as a salesperson, unless it's absolutely dazzlingly bright sunshine, you're out on the desert somewhere, you must never have on sunglasses. That prospect needs to clearly see those eyeballs. Whether it is fact or fiction, most people have been taught that if he won't look in the eye, he ain't honest. How many of you have ever heard that? I don't like that guy. Wouldn't look me in the eye. Well, my experience has been that the greatest con men of all time, I mean the smoothest talking rascals I have ever seen, could look you dead center with those baby blue eyes and just charm you out of your last buck. And they never varied at all. I mean, they looked you dead center. But most people agree that they don't trust those who will not look them in the eye. And so if you can't see their eyes, then the tendency not to trust is much greater. Among other things, they might think you're on drugs, you know, and that's the reason that you need to have those eyeballs where they can see. So anyhow, the prospect has said, you've asked them if they like the product. And they say, yeah, I like the product, but the price is too high. Then you lower your voice, you look at them and say, wouldn't you agree, Mr. Prospect, that it is difficult to pay too much for something you really like? Now, that's a pretty good question. And if you're selling a low-ticket item, cosmetics, brushes, necktie, wallet, items, you know, that are not a significant purchase in itself, a single item, a lot of times that one question is enough. But if you're selling a lifetime insurance program, or if you're selling a fancy luxury automobile, or if you're selling a home at $200,000, you're going to have to come up with more than that. A lot of times say, yeah, well, I see what you mean, but yeah, I think you can pay too much for something, even if you really do like it. I'd like to have a Cadillac, but I'm not going to give you $50,000 for one. But what you've done is significant because you have started that individual to thinking. Now, this brings us right back to something important. We call it the fear of loss close. Again, remember that the fear of loss is greater than the desire for gain. You need to establish in that prospect's mind the fact that he's safe in dealing with you, that he's not going to lose. And for him, a loss could either be money or it could be embarrassment, a loss of face. He's not going to lose by buying from you. But he will lose product benefits if he doesn't buy from you. So one effective way to do this is simply to say, Mr. Prospect, let me point out that you're going to be concerned about price only one time. That's when you buy. But you're going to be concerned with quality during the entire lifetime of the product. Then you lower your voice, look him right in the eye again, and say, wouldn't you agree that it's better to invest a little more than you had planned instead of a little less than you should? That is a good question. Wouldn't you agree that it's better to invest a little more than you had planned instead of a little less than you should? You see, if you invest a little more than you had planned, all you're talking about is pennies. If you invest less than you should and the product will not do what you had wanted it to do, then you literally lose everything. A little more than you had planned instead of a little less than you should. John Ruskin made an astute observation about price. It's unwise to pay too little. When you pay too much, you lose a little money. That's all. When you pay too little, you sometimes lose everything because the thing you bought was incapable of doing what it was bought to do. The common law of business balance prohibits paying a little and getting a lot. It can't be done. If you deal with the lowest bidder, it is well to add something for the risk you run. And if you do that, then you will have enough to pay for something better. That makes sense, doesn't it? Let me tell you why I encourage people to read and study so much. The question which I've used, when you agree it's better to pay a little more than you'd planned, that was initiated by the John Ruskin statement. Had I not read what John Ruskin said, then the other thing would never have come to mind. Better to pay a little more. Let me see if we can establish that in this way. How many of you ladies here today have got some cosmetics at home in a drawer? They've been there about a year. The jars are tightly sealed or the lids are tightly clamped. You're not using them. You know perfectly good and well you are never going to use them. But they're still good. And it would be wasteful, sinful, to take those cosmetics out and throw them away. You're not about to do that. What you are going to do is wait another year. And at the end of the next year, they then will be dried out, won't be useful for anybody, and now you can throw them away with a clear conscience. All the girls are snickering. Ladies, here's the question. Wouldn't it have been better to have paid or invested a little more than you had planned instead of a little less as you did? As it is, you have lost everything. That is, unless you now take those cosmetics down to the Salvation Army or some other charitable organization and donate to them so they can be used and you can get a tax write-off as a result of it. And the recipient wins and you win and everybody wins and they're happy as a result of it. My good friend, the late Dick Gardner, put it this way. Why settle for the get-by when in the long run the good cost less? That's a powerful statement. It's a profound statement. Why settle for the get-by when in the long run the good costs less? That leads us into the cost close. Prospect still says it costs too much. Then you simply ask, Mr. Prospect, if you could convince yourself that the price is more than fair, would you have any objection to going ahead with a yes decision today? Then the next question, are you really concerned about price or is it cost you're concerned about? Is it price or is it cost? Now, I want to stress a point here as you see me in this live presentation move in front of the blackboard. When you see me move to the blackboard, that literally means that you need to have a talking pad and be using it with your prospect. In our society, we have been conditioned to believe what we see and to question what we hear. Is this not so? All of your life, you've heard people say little things like, well, listen, I was there, friend. I saw it with my own two eyes, and seeing is believing. Even though that's not necessarily true, we've been conditioned to believe that it is. What I mean is not necessarily true. Very simple. If you and I were to see a traffic accident, same time, same place, under identically the same circumstances, chances are excellent that 20 minutes later, you would be giving the wrong report on it. At least one of us would be given the wrong report. Maybe both of us. We watch our Saturday's Heroes, you know, on television. And the good guy goes out to catch a pass. And just as about to catch a pass, the bad guy comes along and knocks it away. And we jump up and down and rant and rave and whoop and shout and snort and scream and holler about those dumb, blind referees. I can't see anything. They ought to get him a CNI dog to lead him around. That's what they ought to do. He ought to be able to see. He fouled our man. He fouled our man. Oh, we are livid that he didn't see the obvious. Then they run a replay. And we say, well, maybe he did finally get one right. But he'd been missing them all day. It's about time he got one right. We have folks been conditioned to believe what we see. And that's not necessarily valid, but we've been conditioned to question what we hear. Now, in the world of selling, what we want to do is to eliminate as many areas of doubt. Remember we said earlier, they don't buy based on what they hear. They don't buy based on what they see. They don't buy based on what you show them or what you say them. They buy based on all of those that they can believe. Now, in order to be more convincing, when you see me go to the board and start writing, that's the time that you need to be writing on your talking pad as you talk to the prospect. Is it price or cost you're going to be concerned about? And in most cases, your prospect will say to you, well, what do you mean? What is the difference between price and cost? And then here's the example I use. Again, you need to translate. I will say this, I guess, 50 times throughout this entire series. You need to translate so that it fits your sales situation. I'm going to use an example because, number one, it happened to me. Number two, it beautifully and perfectly demonstrates exactly what I'm talking about. 1971, we went down to buy my son, who at that time was 6 years old, a bicycle. Now, in 1971, we went, first of all, to the Swin bicycle shop. And the bicycle we looked at was $64.95. Well, 1971, you just don't spend $65 to buy a six-year-old a bicycle. He's just going to tear it up anyhow. So we, as prudent parents, went down to the discount store and found a really neat little bicycle for $34.95. Now, the price of one was $64.95. The price of the other was $34.95. We were excited about that $34.95 price. We bought it. 6 weeks later, we went into the same store to get new handlebars for it. Now, because it was in warranty, they gave them to us, didn't cost us anything. About a month later, though, we went back in to get more new handlebars, and now the warranty is no longer in effect, and so we ended up investing $4.50 for those new handlebars. About 2 months later, the entire sprocket apparatus came completely unglued. So we went down, and when we got through, the bill was $15 and change. I don't know exactly how much. About a month later, the bearings in one of the wheels went kaput. We went down, and they were going to cost $3, $4, $5, $6, I don't know how many dollars, because at that point, we threw in the towel. We said, enough is enough is enough. At that point, you see, we had invested $54.45 in that bicycle. We then went down to the Swin bicycle shop and invested $64.95 in the Swin bicycle. Now, my son literally rode that bicycle until he got to be too big to ride it. For 10 years, he was, when he was 16 years old, he was still playing riding it. He was too big by then to actually ride it. But in 10 years' time, we did not invest another dime in that bicycle with the exception of two tires, and that had nothing to do with the quality of the bicycle. So let's look at what we're talking about. The price of this one was $34.95, the least expensive bicycle. We used that bicycle, not counting the downtime. My son rode it for 6 months. That means the cost of that bicycle was $9 a month. That was the cost. The Swin bicycle, he rode it and used it for 10 years. Total price, $65. That means that we had ridden that bicycle for $6.50 a year. That was the cost of it. Mr. Prospect, one priced $34.95 but cost $9 a month. The other one was priced at $64.95 but it only cost $6.50 a year. Let me ask you again, Mr. Prospect, is it price you're concerned about or is it cost? In the cost close, then you simply lower your voice, you look them in the eye, and you say, there are many people, Mr. Prospect, who can beat us on price, but nobody beats us on cost. Since price is a one-time thing, And cost is a lifetime thing. If I'm reading you right, I'm betting that you're mostly interested in cost, aren't you? We can have this installed by next Friday, or if there's an emergency, we can have it in by Tuesday. Which would you prefer? I believe when you educate, you see, that's what that clothes beautifully does. It educates them to a fact. It educates them to the possibilities that your product has to offer. Now, where will this work? A friend of mine, Bill Egan, who's a Buick Datsun dealer in Bradley, Illinois, worked it this way. There was an elderly couple who, when Bill came in from out of town, listening, I might say, to this close on my other set of tapes, which this one is replacing and is reinforcing, I should say. When Bill was listening to those tapes coming in, he heard this exact close. And this was the third time this elderly couple had been in to buy this new car from them. Two salesmen had already worked with them and couldn't get the sale. The third one was then working with them, and the couple kept saying, the price is too high. The price is too high. Well, Bill walked in, and they invited him to sit down and discuss what the issue was. Then Bill said to the couple, Mr. and Ms. Prospect, it will involve $9,600 to make the exchange. They gave him the same objection to begin everybody else. Well, that price is too high. Well, they were like everybody else. They want the best possible price. But Bill looked at him and he said, let me ask you, is it price that you're really concerned about, or is it cost? Right out of the book. And they said, in essence, well, what's the difference? Here's what Bill said. He's talking to the lady. Ma'am, price is a one-time thing. Cost can go on forever and ever as long as you have the particular product. Now, my question is this. Wouldn't it be better to pay a fair price one time and be through with it than to go on paying those little costs you get from a product, which is probably not as good as what you're looking at right now? At this point, Bill paused. The lady looked at her husband, looked back at Bill, and said, I'll take it. A lot of people are looking for an excuse to buy and a reason to buy. And I'll deal with that later. But if you can give them both, you've got a much better chance of selling. Now, there are several factors involved here. Number one, the couple obviously wanted this particular car. That was the third time they had been in there. Number two, Bill used the proper voice inflection, a solid business reputation, and a talking pad in the transaction. And then he also used a simple analogy to make his point and hold the prospect's interest. Now, what was the point there? A little analogy he used? He asked permission. He said, Miss Prospect, can I tell you a little story to illustrate a point? I said, well, sure. He said, about a year ago, I needed to asphalt the parking lot here in my building. He said, like a lot of other people, like you, for example, he said, I was interested in the best price. And so he said, I shopped around. He said, I discovered that the more base of gravel you had, the more the expense was. And he said, I made the mistake of dealing with the company that gave me the best price. Net result, they use a very low gravel base. And he said, it wasn't 3 months before the first little signs of it beginning to crack took place. And he said, in a year's time, the whole thing was a shambles, and I had to spend a great deal of extra money. He said, now, Ms. Prospect, wouldn't it have been better if I'd just gone ahead in the beginning and gotten what I really knew I ought to have and what I really did want? That analogy. When you tell people stories, you see, they can relate to that. And if you can help them to translate it to their situation. Then, of course, Bill did number four. He asked a question. Here's my next point. Wouldn't it have been doubly unfortunate if Bill had missed the sale? Here's a couple who obviously wanted that car. That was their third trip in. Now, he would have missed the sale had he not used the right sales technique. You see, I believe we as salespeople have a strong moral obligation. If we sell a good product at a fair price, If we honestly feel that it does help the prospect, I believe we have a moral responsibility to learn as much as we can about making the sale so that we can help them get what they want. That way we also obviously get what we want. Incidentally, there's demonstrable proof that when a person signs an order for a significant amount of money, and in that case it was $9,600, that their pulse rate actually goes up. That's right. There's excitement there. There's that little question that we talked about earlier. Am I making the right decision? Is there a chance that I'm going to lose? We become completely aware of the extent of the effect of the decision, the impact it has on that person, then we will become more empathetic and deal with them more effectively. And dealing with a price objection, again, you got to remember that a lot of people just automatically say the price is too high. One other thing you can do, I'm glad you're concerned about price, Mr. Prospect, because that's one of our most attractive advantages. Would you agree then, as a practical matter, a product is worth what it can do for you and not what you have to pay for it? That's what a product is worth. A glass of water could be worth $1 million. If you were 3 miles out in the desert and about to die, and a glass of water was the energy you needed to get back in, the price of the glass of water, if somebody came along selling water and said it's $10 a glass, I guarantee you wouldn't haggle over the price. If you had the money, you would buy the water. Mr. Prospect, our company had to make a choice between building our product as cheaply as possible and selling it as a get-by product, or building quality into the product for service, durability, and your long-lasting enjoyment. In short, for long-range value and benefit. Most people, Mr. Prospect, and I'll bet that includes you, clearly understand that good things are not cheap, and cheap things are seldom good. There's so many things that can be said, but people do forget about the price. They never, though, forget about poor quality and poor service. But what I'm saying is that people do forget price. They do not forget the quality of the merchandise, unless it's lousy. Then they'll remember that forever and ever. And then the next clothes that I want to use is what I call the quality clothes. This is one you use in a department store. Or if you're selling a low-ticket item, this might be the only clothes that you need. If it is a high-ticket item you're selling, then you don't use this one in the beginning. You use it a little later on. The prospect says the price is still too high. You lower your voice. You look at your prospect and you say, well, you know, Mr. Prospect, many years ago, our company made a basic decision. We decided that it would be easier to explain price one time than it would be to apologize for quality forever. And I'll bet you're glad we made that decision, aren't you? Now, you can use that for low-ticket items or high-ticket items. If it's a high-ticket item, you would not use it initially. Ab Jackson, who sells for State Farm Insurance out in Tucson, Arizona, told me that one evening he was making a call on a prospect with a proposal that was twice as large as any sale he had ever made. The prospect really gave him a bad time. And Ab said, you know, Zig, my career really was in jeopardy. Things had not been going too well for me. And so I wrestled back and forth with the prospect during the presentation. And when we got down to the close, he just flat stated that price is too high. He said, you know, Zig, I looked at the prospect just like you'd said. I'd been listening to your tapes on the way out there. And I lowered my voice, looked him right in the eye and said, well, you know, Mr. Prospect, many years ago at State Farm, we made a basic decision. We decided that it would be easier to explain price one time than it would be to apologize for poor quality and most of all, poor service for the life of the contract. And Mr. Prospect, you got to be glad we made that decision. Ab said the prospect sat there stunned just for a moment and then broke out in a big old smile and said, I'll take it. It is twice as big as any sale he had ever made. Now, what I'm saying there again is this. You have got to translate. You've got to take the things that we're talking about and you have got to move them into your own situation. That quality close there is one that will work. Then occasionally you'll have a prospect, and we call this the answer for everything close. Occasionally you'll have a prospect who'll say, well, I must commend you. Doesn't make any difference what I bring up. You've got an answer for it. Or they might say, well, you've certainly done your homework. Doesn't make any difference what I say. You know exactly what to say. Or you come back at me, you get me every time. Occasionally you'll have a husband and a wife in a situation, and the husband might say, oh, Moffitt, don't make no difference what you say. That dude's got an answer for everything. But whether it's highly sophisticated and very complimentary, or whether it's in a colloquial environment, regardless of what the objection is, if it comes out in the form of a compliment, even though it might be a little sarcastic, you've done your homework. You know what you're talking about. You're a professional. You want to be very careful that you don't at that point feed your ego. You can feed your ego, or you can make the sale. You cannot do them both. If you modestly admit that you were number one in the region last month and the month before, you have just fed your ego. You will not make the sale in most cases. But if you want to make the sale, then you need to lower your voice, look them right in the eye and say, well, you know, Mr. Prospect, I really appreciate that comment and I'm going to take it as a compliment. But realistically, there are many things I don't have the answer to. That's one of the reasons I'm so excited about selling the product, which is the answer to your problem. And that's what you really want, isn't it? Nodding your head as you do. I've said 100 times through the series, the right words, the right voice inflection, the right intent will substantially improve your professionalism and the results that you get in the world of selling. The quality close is important. The answer for everything close is important. Again, I refer you back to the Forum Corporation. They say the integrity of that salesperson is the critical area. It is so important. High performers in the world of selling establish trust with customers by one-on-one eye-to-eye communication skills. They maintain trust by personally assuming responsibility for completing the sale, which means servicing the account and utilizing their company support people in the most effective manner. High performers demonstrated great integrity with their follow-through and belief that the sale is not complete until product is installed and functioning satisfactorily. That's career billing selling. Now I'm going to get into what I call the shame close, because this next close involves virtually everything we've been talking about through the first part of the series. How do you use your voice? How do you upgrade the prospect into buying a more expensive product, a better product, I guess I really should say? How do you negotiate just a little bit? How do you use your skills? How do you service the account? All of this is tied up in this one little story. If you're ever in St. Louis, gentlemen, I'm going to suggest that you get yourself a shoe shine. Go to the airport there, and whether you need one or not, you will enjoy the experience. You want to go see Johnny. Now, Johnny's stand is underneath the restaurant, so when you go in the front door of the airport, turn left, go down to the restaurant, and then go downstairs, and there'll be a stand. A number of years ago, I was changing planes in St. Louis, and the arrangement was a little different then. His stand was over there by the carousel. Had a few minutes, and so I went down to get the shine, and as I stepped to the door, there were 4 guys inside shining shoes, and all 4 of them were busy. But the guy in the 3rd chair was just finishing, and as he stepped down, Johnny motioned to me, and he said, "You're next." Well, I walked over and climbed up in the chair and sat down while Johnny completed the transaction with his customer. And while he was doing that, I looked at the prices. They've changed since then, but the regular shine was 75 cents. The wax shine was $1. The spit shine was $2. I decided I'd get a regular shine for 75 cents and tip him a quarter and I'd be on my way. As I say, this was a number of years ago. Well, he finished dealing with his customer. He came over and he looked up at me and he said, "What kind?" I said, "Regular." He literally took a half step back. He looked up at me and he said, "Regular? Should have known then I was in for an unusual shoe shine." But I wasn't about to let that dude get the best of me. So I said, "Yeah, regular, you do such a fantastic job. I know this one is going to be great. I'll be able to catch my plane. I'll be on my way." The guy never grunted, never said a thing, not a word. He just reached over and he got the saddle soap. You know, they clean the shoes first. And he put the saddle soap on both my shoes. Then he reached over and he got the drying cloth and started drying my left shoe. And when he finished drying it, he rubbed his finger across the leather and it squealed. You could have heard it for two city blocks. When he did that, he stopped and looked up and he said, "Man, these are really nice shoes. That is good leather." He said, "What kind are they?" I said, "They're Bally's." He said, "Bally's? Man, those are nice shoes." I said, "Yes, they really are. Most comfortable shoe I've ever had." He said, "Don't they cost an awful lot of money?" I said, "Well, yes, they do, but I'm on my feet so much, I just feel that I deserve a really good pair of shoes." Well, he said, "These are really nice." Now, in the meantime, he's drying the other shoe off. And he reaches over then and he grabs the shoe polish to start putting on my shoes. But before he does, he reaches up to grab the pant leg. Now, I had this suit on, which I deliberately wore today so that you could see it. And as he reached up and grabbed the pant leg, he said, "You know, that's the most unusual piece of cloth I have ever seen." And I said, "Well, thank you very much. It is an unusual piece of cloth." I said, "Doyle Hoyer from Fort Madison, Iowa, who sells me all of my clothes, tells me that this cloth came from Ireland." And he said to me, "Zig," he said, "that suit will wear like iron." He said, "If it doesn't last you 5 years," he said, "I'll give you your money back." He said, "It really is going to wear." Well, I know not only was Doyle telling me the truth, he was underselling. I have just finished the 7th year of wear for this suit. And I challenge you to come look me over very carefully. And with the exception of the lining inside, which I'm going to replace this summer, so I'll be ready to go again next winter, you cannot tell that this suit is not a brand new suit. I even had the lapels cut down so that it would, stay in style. I love this suit of clothes. Well, I was telling Johnny about the cloth and about how much I enjoyed the suit and all. And he said, "Well, what kind is it?" And I said, "Well, it's a Hickey Freeman." "Man," he said, "those dudes are expensive." I said, "Well, they're not inexpensive, but one of the major causes of the price was because of this cloth." He said, "Well, it is absolutely beautiful." Now, he's working all the time. He's talking, and now he's had to polish on. He's starting to shine. And I don't know what you know about shoe shining, but I was in the Navy a couple of years, and I frequently shine my own shoes. I know something about shining shoes. I do know that when they are popping the cloth, they are not shining the shoe. That has nothing to do with the shoe shine. That's pure promotion. That's sales talk. That's advertising. Now, there's nothing wrong with that because there's people outside, you see, who are walking by, and he's trying to drum up more business. I approve of that. I'm glad of it. But old Johnny was just a popping away, and all of a sudden he stopped between pops. And he literally took a half a step back. And he looked up at him, and he said, "You know, it just seemed like a shame. Man will spend over $100 on a pair of shoes. He'll spend several $100s for a suit of clothes. And all he's trying to do is look his best. And then he won't spend another dollar to get the best looking shine in the whole world to top everything else off." I said, "Spit on him, man. Spit on him." Well, now, I don't know how you are, but when I get a 75-cent shine, a two-bit tip, that's all right. But who ever heard of a two-bit tip on a $2 shine? Now, folks, people with class just don't do things like that. And so when he finished his shine, I whipped out another dollar to give with the two that he was going to get and the $3. And when I started walking out of there, man, you talking about stepping high. Old Zig was really stepping high, wondering to myself, what in the world is this guy doing shining shoes? Then I looked up at the clock. And as I looked up, it clicked straight up and down, 10 o'clock. Now, that's very important because when I sat down in that chair, the clock clicked straight up and down 3 minutes till 10. I was in that dude's chair 3 minutes. I gave him $3. Now, you don't have to be a Phi Beta Kappa from MIT to figure it out. That is 60 bucks an hour. Did you realize that is what we pay the psychiatrist? Of course, this fella's doing some good. Now, I know what you're thinking. Incidentally, some psychiatrists also occasionally do some good. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Ziegler, come on, man, 60 bucks an hour. You know the guy doesn't do that all day. That'd be $480 a day. Oh, I know that. Cut it half in two. That's 240. Cut that half in two. That's 120. Cut that half in two. That's 60. And I'll absolutely guarantee you, you don't have to cut it that last time. This guy is good. But did you know that $60 a day is over $18,000 a year for shining shoes? And as we'd say down home, if that dude ain't making 30 G's a year, ain't a dog in Georgia. I guarantee you that he is pulling it in. But let me remind you of something very, very important right here. Johnny is a professional. He's good. He is a salesman and he is a promotional man promoting his business. He's the only shoe shiner I've ever seen in my life who had his name on. It's Johnny. I asked him what his last name was. He said, I'm not going to tell you. If I tell you, you'll forget them both, but you never will forget Johnny. And he burned it in my mind forever. That's smart. That's good selling. I have no need to know his last name, really, but he knew I had a need to know his first name. He even had his title on, Shoeologist.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.